for us bookkeepers, and it's just been horrific as it is every year. You'd think that after all these years, my clients would have all their people lined up for me and ready to go, but no, not at all. So anyhow, I wanted to bring up some of the craziness around UFO Con. I'm going to give you guys the backroom story today. It's been wild. I can't even begin to tell you because, okay, let me tell you why. I'm going to go off on one of my tangents and I'll swing back around to UFO Con, okay? Ever since Jake Barber came out, my phone has not stopped ringing. And the 2 hour and 47 minute episode of the interview, people are freaking out. And I'll tell you why. As you guys all know, I am the lady who said, at the end of the day, it's all about mind control by the ETs. I said, that is the most important thing. And that's why I did those three mind control conferences, which were they changed my life because half of the people are dead. Half of them were killed of the half that are dead and murdered. I mean, I'm not joking, folks. And the other half, I don't know. They said they committed suicide. I'm not sure. Okay. So now, or they had heart attacks. One of them had a heart attack, but he was young. He was happy for the first time in his life. His girlfriend's in the other room and he goes to take a shower, comes back and he's dead. And I'm thinking, heart attack gun? I mean, they've got all kinds of things they can give you a heart attack with. Anyhow, I'm just speculating. I have no idea. So I'm listening to Jake Barber, and there's one sentence in that 2 hour and 47 minutes about mass mind control on the planet. And as you guys know, I've told you, that's the bottom line here. It has nothing to do with disclosure. It has nothing to do with the military and the DOD and DIA and EEG and all the people involved with, telling us about the alien threat. It has nothing to do with any of that because at the end of the day, they control the planet. And I'm sorry to say that. And they control it with God or the source or whatever that is out there that's running the show here in this matrix. Because every dimension bleeds together, every time bleeds together. God is everywhere within all those dimensions. And the ETs have, they're an upper dimensional being from us, no matter what they are. If they're, even if they are physical like us, they have mastered their DNA. Okay? Once you master DNA, you've tapped into the source, which is God. And that when once you can manipulate matter like that, then you are on another level than us. We are the monkeys in the universe because we are stuck in a 3D reality, and our punishment from God, I'm going to say this one time and I'm going to say it real slow, our punishment from God because of the fallen angels, if you want to call them angels or ETs or whatever, when we were created by these extraterrestrial beings on behalf of themselves, not our God, the source God, the loving God, the one that's in that highest dimension of total love and light. So, where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. So, when they created us, our punishment for being created by these things, I don't know what they were. I don't know if it was the Plajarans or the Greys or the Reptilians. I don't know who it was. I can't even speculate because there's so many races that could have created us. That's another problem. But there are a race of gray ETs that have said in many cases that they did create us. So we'll see. We'll see in the end. I mean, who knows? We may never get disclosure. Look, we all get disclosure when we die. It's that simple. But so back to what I was saying. I'm trying to get this in word it properly for you guys. So I just need a second here to gather my thoughts on it. So the reality really is this. Once you you touch into that matter, that you can control matter, and like in Star Trek, where you can dematerialize us and put us back together again, you're on another dimension, another time, another space, okay? Because that's just how it functions. And that's what all the scientists are saying right now. Gary Noland, Kit Green, Eric Davis, John, anyhow, all those guys, Hal Puthoff. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's mind boggling, but they all know it too. The problem is there's a containment field to allow the ETs and all their crafts and everything that goes around each molecule in this reality that keeps them here without disintegrating or blowing our reality up. Okay, think about that for a moment. And then the mind control aspect of this whole thing is that, well, I've told you guys about, I'm going to say it again. I'm going to repeat this story for you guys. It's the whole Stan Romanek movie story, and I'm going to keep repeating it till you guys actually hear what I'm telling you, okay? So I'm laid in bed one day, and my angels, or my ETs, or whatever you want to call them, as usual, are bothering me as I'm starting to wake up. They always talk to me in that, not always. I mean, I can go a week without hearing from them, and then I'll hear from them 2 days in a row, and then I won't hear from them for 2 weeks. But they're always with me when I'm awake in my consciousness. I know they're there, and I can talk to them if I want to. Okay. It's not like I'm having a conversation. It's more like, hey, should I do UFOCon this year? They go, you know, thumbs up, go for it. We'll make sure everything's okay, you know, that kind of stuff. So I don't really get like a major conversation, but if I need an answer to a question, they're there for me, okay? And I pray when I do it too. So I'm talking to Source while I'm talking to them to make sure everything's all right. Okay, bottom line. So Stan Romanek, I'm laying in bed and they say, watch the Stan Romanek movie again. I said, no, I don't want to. And I rolled over and back to sleep. As usual, I don't do anything they tell me to do unless I feel like it. So I'm pretty stubborn. So again, about a week later, you know, watch Stan Romanek movie. I'm like, no, I don't want to. So another week goes, but no, I think it was 2 days went by that time. And they woke me up, and they were pretty insistent this time. You have to watch the Stan Romanek movie. So I said, okay, I'll watch it. So later that night at work, I'm watching it. And it gets to the point where the gray ET is standing on the back porch. This is the first movie in history that we have ever captured a gray ET standing on a back porch on film where people can see it, okay? I'm going to clarify that again. First time in a movie we've ever seen a gray ET, not a puppet, not an animatronic thing. Stan Romanek actually catches the ET. And I'm not saying it's the first time, but it's the first time a major motion picture release had an ET in it, a real ET. So I'm looking at this thing at that point in the movie, and the ET is not there. Now, you'd say to yourself, well, Lorian, is the movie broken? You know, what happened? And I'm like, to myself, I'm thinking, something's wrong. I start to panic because something's wrong. I know that something's wrong, and I know it's kind of like I felt like if that lady who had the stroke, and she was a brain scientist, and she kept saying something's wrong, but I don't know what it is. And that's what I was going through. I was going through this whole thing like something's wrong with my brain. Something is wrong because I know something's wrong, but I didn't know what it was. See, that's the beauty of this. I didn't know, have any clue what was wrong, but I knew something was wrong. And I'm looking at this, and you guys, I don't see a gray ET anymore. I see a black shadowy blob. That's all I see. And I can kind of make out a couple of eye sockets that kind of were whitish. So they kind of glowed a little bit. But that's all I saw. And I know it's wrong. I know something is way wrong. Now, I saw the ET earlier in the movie that pops up in the window. I saw that one. No problem. And I knew it was supposed to be there, of course. So I was really upset and perplexed, but I let it go, and I didn't think much about it for another 3 or 4 days, and they wake me up again and say, you have to watch the Stan Romanek movie. And I'm like, oh my God, not again. And I didn't do it for like a week or two. Finally, they woke me up and they said, you've got to watch it again. I said, no. And they said, you have to. And I said, why? And they said, we can't tell you yet. I said, okay, fine. So I watch it again. Same thing happens. And this time I'm really upset. This time I know something is really wrong. It's kind of like, I guess what women go through if they're roofied, because they know something's happened, but they don't know what it is. That's kind of what it, I can equate it to, I think, because I was really upset this time. And I don't know why I got so upset either. That was the weird part about the whole thing. Why was I so upset? And so, again, I finally go to sleep, and a couple of days later, I'm calming down around the whole thing, and they finally get a hold of me again and say, you've got to watch it for a final time. I said, I really don't want to. What is the point in all this? I said, you're just really pissing me off. See, you guys, this is how I talk to my angels, okay? Like, you're really pissing me off. I'm not going to talk to you ever again, you know? And so I'm giving them a really bad time, and they finally said, please, please, watch it. I said, okay, fine. So I think it was 4 days later. I didn't just go watch it again. So this time I'm watching it, and the gray alien's back. He's back where he's supposed to be, and I can remember him being there, okay? Okay, you guys, now remember, I didn't even know what was missing. I had no idea, but I knew something was wrong, okay? So, I asked them, the next morning I'm waking up, and I ask them, why did you do this to me? Why? And they said, very succinctly, call Jack Roth and tell him what happened, and ask him a question. And I'm not going to tell you what the question is until you hear the rest of the story. So I thought, that's weird. Okay. So I called Jack, and I said, Jack, when you guys premiered the movie at the film festival in Florida, which, by the way, everyone, was the only time it was ever played in a theater, ever, the government swooped in and squelched that movie and turned Stan into a pariah. But you guys all know that story. So anyhow, so long story short, I asked him, what happened at the theater? What happened when you premiered the movie? I said, did people come running out of the theater or walking out and freaking out that they'd seen a gray alien for the first time in their life? I said, what happened? Because I know the theater was full. I talked to a couple people that were there, and they said there were 400, 500 people there. And he said, you know, Lorianne, it was the weirdest thing. Nobody really came out and talked to us about it at all. And I said, Jack, I said, I've got a message from you from the ETs. They told me to tell you that only the people they allow to see them can see them, and that they can control everybody's mind around seeing the ETs. And more than likely, and I threw this as an interjection because I didn't ask my ETs, but I said, more than likely, they controlled everybody's mind in that theater, and maybe only the contactees saw that alien. He goes, that would make so much sense, because we could never figure out why nobody said anything to us about it. You know, they say great movie or whatever, but no one ever specifically walked up and said, wow, the first time I've ever seen a gray alien, it's in a movie, you know? I mean, it was like so weird to him. And the rest of the guys in J3 Productions, they just never figured that one out. And then, of course, the whole scandal started with Stan, and then it just got dropped. It was like the movie got dropped, everybody got dropped, and they took a huge hit for a loss from Stan's whole debacle. And yeah, and by the way, you guys may not know this, I was very close to Stan. Well, this was not very close, but I was close enough that I could call him and talk to him about what was going on at the time, and Lisa, his wife at the time. And one time I was calling him and I said, what's going on with the movie? He goes, oh, he goes, you know, it's going to premiere soon. And he goes, I got a phone call from some government agency just a while back. He goes, I think it was a government agency. I'm pretty sure. And they said, Stan, your movie's never going to go. It's never going to go beyond one time showing. We're going to make sure of it. And they hung up on him. And I felt so bad for him. I said, God, I hope they're wrong. I hope that your movie really gets out there and shows people that this is the real deal, you know, that ETs do exist. And you've been lucky enough and chosen to be able to put them on film on a camera, you know, and get them in a movie. I said, nobody else has been able to accomplish that. And he goes, well, I sure hope so, because the government doesn't like me very much. I said, yeah, I know that. So anyhow, shortly thereafter, the movie did premiere. Within a week or two, his life got totally ruined. And yeah, and he's never been back. And he was injured and hurt very badly. He had brain damage, liver damage, from being beaten up. And it's just been an ugly, ugly situation for poor Stan. And that movie's just kind of fallen by the wayside. And it is another piece of proof that disclosures already happened, but the government got total control over it. So you guys, and you got to remember, Stan, I don't know if you guys know much about his story, but all the spooks were hanging out at his house looking for the ETs. So, pretty wild stuff. I'm telling you, there's no shortage of insanity within the UFO community and you know, putting people in their place if they're talking about it too much in areas. So anyhow, so as far as UFO Con goes this year, I've gotten speakers, and then they've had to not do it because of certain reasons. Mostly, which I find really sad, is the fact that a lot of these guys that wanted to come speak for me have wives that are not, they're not well. They're sick, and they have to take care of them, or they thought they had someone that could take care of them and they can't, or, you know, things are just bad for some people. And so they kind of asked me, you know, can you pay for both of us to come out so my wife can hang out in the hotel room and I can take care of her? And I'm like, I can't afford it. Oh, I feel so bad that I can't afford it. It's just terrible that I can't afford it. But, you know, I guess it's just not meant to be right now. And so many people are suffering through this whole, you know, MNRA whatever thingy they did to everybody. And so many people are getting like lupus and all kinds of weird immune diseases they never had before. And I feel so bad for people, what's happened to them, because our government, man, I'm telling you, up until, you know, just recently, I could say that we were doomed. And hopefully we're going to rise out of the doom with, you know, the new administration. I don't know, though. I've got some real, I don't know. Like you guys, I've always told you, I like Trump. I'm not, there are things about him that I just, the way he does things sometimes, just I want to slap him upside the head. I know you guys are laughing at me like, yeah, like I could ever slap Trump upside the head. But if I could, I would. You guys know me well enough to know that if I'm standing in front of him and I know he's done something boneheaded, I would slap him upside the head. Oh, man, I'd probably get in Guantanamo for that. But who knows? He did let all the J6ers go, which I was pretty amazed. I mean, I couldn't believe it, but thank God he did. You know, and there were a couple of them that probably shouldn't have gotten out, but most of them had done nothing. They had done nothing wrong. There was an old lady, she was probably 75 years old, that was there, and she walked through the building. She had a flag. I don't even know if she knew exactly what she was even doing, except for she was just walking through the rotunda, and they were escorted in by the police, and then she ends up spending 10 years in prison. She was in there for 4 years, and I'm just like, she was 71 when she went in and 75 when she got out, I think, if I remember correctly. Oh, my God. That's horrific just for walking through the building. Oh, God. You know, I'm sorry, you guys. I know I have a lot of listeners that are on the, you know, more left-leaning side. And, yes, I agree with a lot of things you guys have to say. I also agree with the right, and I'm right down the middle as a libertarian, because I just can't deal with half of this craziness on both sides of the fence. Everybody's nuts, and everybody is just looking out for the number one. That's all they're doing. So back to UFO Con, just briefly for a second. I'm having troubles with, you know, I get a speaker and then they can't be with us, and then, you know, something will happen, and then I'm waiting and waiting. I can't wait any longer. I've got till February 1st to get this roster done. So what I'm going to do something I've never done before. I'm going to say, if you are a contactee and you believe you have the chops to build a PowerPoint presentation about your UFO contact or something with ETs or, you know, anything that you want to talk about for 50 minutes, and you can build a PowerPoint presentation that is not full of text. We are not allowing that anymore. It has to be a lot of pictures, has to be, you know, 3 bullet points and 4 words or something like that. Don't give me a PowerPoint that it's all sentences. We don't take them anymore. So if you think you can do that and you want to talk in front of a group of people and you've never done it before, I'm looking for somebody brand new to come out of the woodwork and tell their story. So get a hold of me through my website, LorianFenton.com. Just go to the contact page and email me there. I've got to go in there and clean up that email tonight so you guys can get through to me. I've heard recently that it's not working, but I will check on it. So email me tomorrow if you want to do that. That'll give me time to clean up that email and tell me your story. And hopefully you live on the West Coast, so you're not going to cost a fortune to get here, and that would be wonderful. And many of our speakers are paying either their hotel room or their travel. So hopefully we can arrange something like that, because we really have no money this year. It's because we didn't do it for a year. We skipped a year and did a small little fundraiser event that I lost money on. So we're really in the hole this year. So, but if we can get this year to go well, we'll have our little nest egg again for the following year, and things won't be as tight. But man, this year, I'm telling you folks, it's like I'm counting pennies, literally. And so it's been crazy. So that's what's going on with UFOCon. I just need speakers now, because the people that said, yeah, I want to do it and I'll be there and you know all that, now they're not available. So I'm twiddling my thumbs here going, how did this happen to me? Okay, it's now, you know, the 27th of January. These people have been committed since the 1st of January, and now I'm sitting here with nobody. Okay, so by Friday, I need to get that information from you so I can figure out if we're going to do this or not. Okay, so let me know if you want to speak. That would be wonderful. So, okay, now I got to bring up our guest. It is John Castella. He is one of my JFK buddies, and he's spoken at my conference, at Jim Fetzer's conference, I believe, and a few others, and he's just wonderful. He originates from Australia, so he's got that lovely accent that we all love and adore. John, are you there?
I am indeed. Can you hear me, Lorraine?
Yes, I can hear you just fine. Now, just for clarifying things, you're not living in Australia anymore. You are now in the States, correct?
Yes, we're Americans now. It doesn't sound like it, but Sally and I are Americans. From the day before the pandemic was declared, we managed to sneak that in a crowded courtroom overlooking the U.S. Capitol just down the street. So, yeah, we're Americans. We're living in the middle of Washington, D.C., in fact, it's quite quiet now, but a week ago we were basically locked in with fences all around us because we're right next to Capital One Arena and the National Building Museum. So Trump went from one to the other to the back to the first last Sunday and Monday, and that was quite exciting. We're used to it. We've been here over this side for 7 years. We're in San Francisco for nearly 5 years, so we're used to it over here. It's good fun in the middle of D.C. Also crazy, but fun.
Yeah, yeah, wild. I can't believe you're living over there. Heart of crazy town.
Well, you're in California, right? We were there for 5 years, and we had to escape to get over this side. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, I live in California. I've been here for almost 40 years now, and I can't leave. I'm entrenched, and there's no way I can make as much money anywhere else. Believe me, I've tried. It's crazy. Right. Well, anyhow, I wanted to ask you, first thing out of the gate, what do you think of – well, tell – before you answer my question, tell everybody about your connection to the JFK assassination, what research you've done, you know, about yourself, and then answer this question for me. What do you think about the JFK document dump that's coming about? So tell us about yourself first.
No worries. Or at least I was going to say, you're not going to convince me to speak at your UFO con, even though I might be able to do it. I'm not at this point going to put my hand up for that. And it's too soon anyway. So you wanted me to start with me. So, it was an interesting, I've got a website, same as you. It's my name, johncostella.com, J-O-H-N. You can find it. It's been around for quite a while. I done quite a number of things over the years. I was in Australia, where it's an interesting place. It's a great place to live, but There's also limited opportunities in some areas. So I've done quite a number of things through the years. I started off in electrical engineering and ended up becoming a theoretical particle physicist. But, you know, it's, as I said, things are a bit thin over there. I was a school teacher for nearly a decade. And then I got out of that and worked for the Department of Defense doing some statistical analyses for about a year, and then private hedge fund and another company and a cancer hospital. And eventually I got a job over here in the States. But the JFK stuff started in that 10-year, 9 or 10-year period when I was a school teacher. Of course, one thing about being an overqualified school teacher is that you do get school holidays and you get a bit of a chance to relax and have a look at things. So it was one Christmas holidays. You got to remember, Christmas holidays are the long summer holidays in Australia. It's all aligned. It's the middle of summer. So one Christmas holidays, I happened to go to the local library and just, you know, relaxing, wanting to find something to read. I'm done with. I didn't really want to be a school teacher anyway. So it's good to be able to kick back and relax and at least have the perk of long school holidays that teachers get, and not be so committed that I'm actually doing what I'm supposed to be doing, which is like preparing all my lessons for the next year. So teachers that tell you that they do that a lot of the time when they're on so-called holidays, they're telling the truth. It's not an easy job, I can tell you that. But I was a bit slack, and it wasn't really what I wanted to do, but I got stuck in it for nearly a decade. So I found this book in the library. It was a picture book, a coffee table book, if you like. Robert Groden had a book called Images. Oh, I had it with me the other week. Images of an Assassination, I think it was. It was basically the long story of Robert Groden. He's a guy that basically got hold of a lot of photographic evidence of the JFK assassination. And anyway, by the early 90s, he put out this quite beautiful, not quite coffee table book. I don't know if you'd have it out there for guests coming for tea or anything civilized like that. But it had a lot of the photographic evidence, stills from Zapruder film and all the other films. There's a bit of a story how he kind of collected all of that stuff back in the late 60s, early 70s. But I found this book, and I'd actually seen that a number of years earlier. The long story there. But, and as I said, at the time I was like an underemployed physicist. I did some computer programming as a hobby, a bit of image processing as a hobby. And I saw some of the images in there, and I thought, oh, okay, this is the most famous event in the world. And this was before 9/11, so I guess it was the most famous event, definitely by then. And these images are sort of blurred. And I seem to remember somewhere reading, okay, the Los Alamos National Labs, which I was fortunate enough to visit when I was doing my PhD, had actually de-blurred these images back in the 70s, which is before, you know, a bit before my time. And why are these images blurred? Anyway, long story short, I was writing a program and inventing some algorithm to do it. It didn't change the world. But I ended up going onto the young internet. This was like 2000, the year 2000. The internet was still relatively young, although us physicists had been around on it from the early 90s when it all started. And ended up coming across, I basically asked some questions on the Usenet groups as they were then, like, where can I get frames of the Zapruder film? I'd like to have a go at deblurring them. And people saying, oh, it's copyrighted, and oh, but you know, there was this law and they released it on DVD. And anyway, long story short, there was a assassination researcher guy, or hobbyist if you like, who had captured every frame off the DVD and actually emailed them to me one by one, because you couldn't just send a whole video or a whole zip file back then. He emailed them to me one by one. And that Are you still there? I heard some funny Skype noises, but that could be because I haven't used
I'm
Skype for a while.
here. I'm
Okay,
here.
I'll ignore those little funny whoop whoop sounds that it makes now and again. It must be somebody,
Okay.
might be someone trying to call me that I don't know. All right,
Oh,
so
yeah, that's it. When you get a message, it makes funny little sounds like bubbling sounds.
I told you I haven't used Skype probably since 2011. Anyway, that's fine. I'll
Okay.
ignore them from now on. I just wanted to make sure
Okay.
you weren't dropping off or dropping back in.
No,
So
I'm trying to eat my lunch.
it's pitch
But
black
go
out.
ahead, I'm
So anyway,
fascinated. I'm sitting here as an audience member myself.
no,
This
it's
is
good.
great. Okay, here we go.
So I was anyway, I got sort of I just wanted the images. I wanted to, I mean, you know, I figured that I would test them on the most famous images in the world. That Los Alamos had had a go at deblurring, and so you know, this was a good test if I can come up with something that works. Anyway, the story's not about the deblurring program, although it did work and it's on my website and I updated it recently. But the point was, I came across a forum, an online forum, not the Usenet groups, but there was an actual forum, a website with the forum software of people that were discussing the assassination and the Zapruder film and everything else. And then I found there was another forum with far fewer people, maybe 100 max, maybe a bit more. I might be casting aspersions on the numbers there. But there was another forum that apparently believed that the Zapruder film was a fake. And so this was very interesting because by that time I'd done enough work trying to de-blur the different frames of the film, like each frame of the, there's 486 frames of the film. It's about 26, 27 seconds long. And each frame you can consider to be another little blur problem. And can you de-blur it and try and get a little bit better picture of what's going on, or at least less misleading picture of what's going on by taking out the blur. So I'd done enough different frames to know that all the blurs work together in very interesting ways. And people had sent me, you know, like the patent, the document, the schematics, the technical specs for the Zapruder camera, the optics and all different things. And it all made sense if you put all that physics together, that all of the blurs made sense. You got the motion of the car, you got how long the shutter is open, you got the motion of the camera, you got the distortion of the distortion that the camera lens makes, it pulls out the corner of the image. You've got perspective changes. You've got all sorts of things. You've got the sprocket holes where the little claw is pulling the film through. This is back for those old enough to even have seen a film camera or had one at school, or the little claw goes in the hole and pulls the film down every fraction of a second, and it makes that sort of clackety noise as it pulls it through. All of these things put together, all the blurs made sense. So this is very sophisticated set of, I mean, not too bad, but it's a lot of physics put together, optics and motion, and quite simple if you like for a physicist, but quite complicated if you're just coming at this from scratch. That it all fit together, like all of these. So when someone on that forum told me, it was actually Josiah Thompson, Tink Thompson is his nickname. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to use his nickname, but he said, "Look, there's this other crazy forum of people, and you know, there's a guy called Jim Fetzer, and he's leading all these people saying that the Zapruder film is a fake, which is ridiculous because this is the best evidence we have of a conspiracy. You know, if you watch the movie JFK by Oliver Stone, which was like, you know, 8 or 9 years earlier than that, and you know, if you're saying the Zapruder film is a fake, you're just a shill for the CIA or something, and you're just trying to throw mud over everything, and then we've got no evidence left because that's the best evidence." So that was kind of fascinating. And my initial answer to him and to the people in that forum was like, I've looked at enough frames of this film. I've analyzed it, you know, calculated the motion of everything and the blur of everything and all the optics and a lot of boring things. And, you know, there's basically no way you could fake this film. You couldn't edit this film. I mean, you could paint something over a frame, I guess, because that doesn't really change any of the properties of anything else. But you can't take stuff out. You can't cut frames out. You can't move things. It'd be almost impossible because, like,
well, I just got a quick question. Can you mask it so it doesn't look like it's there with another piece of the outlying area like we do in Photoshop?
That part is pretty easy. So okay. Altered photos, they've been doing them for 100 years before the JFK assassination, you know, 1865 or 3.
Yeah.
You could alter photos, even movies. Like movies are just sequences of frames. So, you know, in World War II, they had fake propaganda films of Hitler dancing the jeep because they cut different things together and made like look like Hitler was dancing, but he wasn't really. It was even in the 1940s. So you could cut things out. And in fact, you've got what came out that same year, Mary Poppins, or the next year, Mary Poppins, I think, came out.
Right.
A lot of effects
exactly.
There. You can do all that. So when you're watching a film at full speed, like Mary Poppins, you can look at it, and but I mean, maybe not today. You know, we're so sophisticated today with all the special effects. We'd look at Mary Poppins and say, that looks so fake. But at the time, you'd look at it and say, wow, that's amazing. It looks like this is happening and that's happening. The problem is when you start analyzing each and every frame as if it was forensic evidence, which is what, they, of course, they should have been doing after the JFK assassination. To some extent, they didn't really need to because the prime suspect was murdered 2 days later. But still, You would think that the Warren Commission would want to sort of get to the bottom of actually that reminds me a little bit about Trump, what you were saying about Trump and executive orders and things. But anyway, maybe I'll come back to that. So the the problem is, if you look at these properties that I'm talking about, all the, and some of it's on the website. I've got a bit of a simple introduction to it. I did give a little bit of an overview of it. Was it 6 weeks, 5 or 6 weeks ago when I was on that other False Flags and Conspiracies
conference. Great conference so, that we had with Jim. Yeah, great. Yeah,
so that's up on YouTube, and I'm the link on my website.
Can you do me a favor right now so my audience can go there? Can you tell them the YouTube address and your website so they know where to go?
Well, the easiest thing to do is to first go to my website, which is johncostella.com. So johncostella.com. Just Google John Costella JFK. And if you don't even spell it correctly, there's no other person that sounds like me that has worked on JFK. From there, there's a little, one of the links on the front page is my JFK stuff. Well, that will probably come up ahead of my actual homepage. And the, I've actually got the video there and a link to it on YouTube right on the top of that JFK assassination page. So it's johncostella.com/JFK. But you can find it any number of ways. You can probably also go into – you can probably find it on YouTube if you search directly False Flags and Conspiracies Conference 2024 and my name. Anyway, there's many ways people can find it, but that's the easiest. And also from that page of mine, I've also got a link to the simple introduction that I went through in that conference, and people can look at it. I actually updated one of the pages substantially after that with just with some better images and movies that I because when I first put that page together 20 years ago, the internet was quite slow, you know, dial-up modems and all those sort of things for people that remember that I had very small images, movies, so that people could actually see it when it came through their phone.
Oh, yeah. That makes
through sense. Their internet, through their modem, right? You know, the modem that made noises, and so very small things. But now, you know, everyone's got multi, you know, 100 megabit per second. So I've put full size and full speed, proper MP.
Oh, cool! That's great video. Because I've been there recently, and it was all small, and I was like, God, I got to get a magnifying glass out.
Yeah, it was a bit embarrassing, and I tried to fix it up a little bit a couple of years ago. But anyway, after the conference last month, I did actually clean up that one page that was the worst, and hopefully most of it's back in a good shape. There's a couple of things that I never actually did in full resolution that are still a little bit fuzzy, but everything else is there. It's more than enough to sort of understand the
okay.
So, anyway,
so we've got a place where they can go to right now and see what your work is, not just go to your website and it's not there, so they can follow along kind of with us today.
They can, yeah. I mean, I'll talk about it first. I'm not sure if I've got a particular page that I'll
No, that's okay. I just want them to have a reference point that, you know, your website isn't just about you and whatever. It's got your actual research on it, and that they can go there and watch what you've done. And we're going to talk about it today, and this is a good jumping off point for them. That's okay. We're good.
Absolutely. Everything's there. I was actually listening again. I was on Black Op Radio. The last time was like 2011 when I happened to be in Vancouver and dropped in on Leno Sanek. And I was listening to that again yesterday and today just to remind myself. I realized, gee, this is 13, 14 years ago, nearly 14 years ago now. So two-thirds of the way back to when I actually did all this work, just to try and remind myself of anything. But even the 2003 Zapruder Film Symposium that Jim Fetzer organized that was in Duluth, he flew me across from Australia to Dealey Plaza in Dallas, and then up to Duluth, where we, six of us, I think, gave presentations. Mine was nearly 4 hours long. So if anyone suffers from insomnia, they can definitely click through the playlist on that. I think somebody actually, of course, YouTube wasn't invented at the time. So all these special, you know, video effects I was showing people, it's just every day now, you know, on Google Maps, you do Street View and none of it existed. But Rich De La Rosa, ran that. I was back to that forum of people that were crazy and they
thought the
film was a fake. He actually uploaded to YouTube all the DVDs of that Duluth Symposium. He had to do it in 10-minute chunks, and that's how I've got it on my website, because that's all you could do on YouTube back when he did it in 2009 or 2010. I was basically at that point was saying, look, there's a fruit of film could not be edited like that. Yes, you could paint something onto a frame, of course, but you can't do all this stuff they're talking about, cutting things out and moving things around and making things larger. It's just not possible, because all the part of the film between the sprocket holes, so the little part where the claw pulls down the film, you don't normally see that, because that's, you only see the middle rectangle where of the projector, you know, the projected up on a wall, or anybody that's never seen a film projected has probably seen a at least a movie of someone projecting a film onto a wall, you only see a rectangle. You don't see those little sprocket holes. But it's only because this film, which is just up the road in the National Archives, it's 6 feet long of 8mm film. So 8mm is pretty small little frames. It's not 35mm like a professional movie would be at the time, I believe. That film, of course, was so important that it's been preserved and scanned and digitized and everything done to it, so that the area between the sprocket holes actually is quite important itself. You know, 99.99% of films, you would never look between the sprocket holes if there was even anything there. And depending on the camera and the settings and whatever, that it might actually mask off that area so there's no imagery there. But with the Zapruder film, the Zapruder camera anyway, the way it works is that stuff that leaks into the area between the sprocket holes actually has double exposures. You actually see part of the next frame and the previous frame, because no one ever sees that. There's no point. The way the camera's designed, you wouldn't even bother masking off so you don't get the next frame sort of double exposed onto that, because you don't see that part. But that actual property, that fact that the Zapruder camera would do that, and what we see on the Zapruder film that's up the street, that they did a high-quality scan, enlargement and digital scan of that in the 1990s, which again gets me back to the JFK Records Act, which I'm going to talk about in a moment, because I've put a pin in that for myself.
Great, but okay.
They have these high-resolution scans, but, of course, we got a DVD, which is not high-resolution, and they mucked around with it, and there's a whole part at the end of the DVD where they show how they put it together, and it's in Jim Fetzer's book in 2003, The Great Zapruder Film Hoax, which I contributed a chapter. I actually, after I looked at that DVD in some detail, I actually added an appendix to the end of it where I say the film, you know, the hoax becomes a joke, because they describe all of the things they did to the frames of the film before they put it on the DVD, and the DVD was supposed to fulfill the requirements of this JFK Records Act of providing a digital reference copy to researchers to fully investigate the Zapruder film. It was reasonable. It was better quality than what we had before. And in fact, I sort of cleaned it up and adjusted the distortion. So most of what you see on the internet today, if you see Zapruder film, apart from a few frames that have been taken from high resolution copies, most of those frames are based on what I put out in 2003, or I updated a little bit in 2007. It was better than what we had, but it's nowhere near what they actually have from the digital scans. So that's also part of the story. It all goes down into sort of rabbit holes like all of these things do. So that's where I was in like 2001. I said, no, they're crazy, Jim Fetzer and all these other people. But it went on.
I got to stop you. You said Jim Fetzer was crazy? Oh, my God.
You know, I basically said no. I said all of them. I said, because this is Tink versus Fetz, the whole.
Right. I remember that whole flap. Yes. Yeah.
And I said, look, no, I mean, I don't know if I actually said that he's crazy on the thing, but I basically said, no, that's ridiculous. You know, that. You know, from what I've seen of the film, there's no way you could edit it, right? And one of these famous last words, of course, as soon as you say something like that, you're bound to prove yourself wrong somewhere down the track. Now, the question that comes up when you do prove yourself wrong, especially if you're a scientist, is what sort of person you are or what sort of scientist you are.
Exactly.
Do you say I was wrong?
Yes, you do. And I love people who do that. John, that's why I adore your work. Anyhow, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No. And, and I wasn't working in a physics lab at that point, so there was no real consequences. It would be different if it was your life of work and you found that you did something wrong. But the correct thing to do is still to say, I made a mistake, because that's science. And you get more credibility, even if you prove that you did something wrong for a year or 5 years or 20 years. You get much more credibility, particularly, you know, as the years go past, if you actually admit you did something wrong. Yeah, it was your best effort at the time, but as you learn more and more evidence comes in. And that's happened a few times for me, even in the JFK case. But in any case, so I was looking into this thing, and Jim, we got into 2002, and Jim Fetzer said, look, next year, 2003, I'm going to have this Zapruder Film Symposium. I don't know where it's going to be, but I want to invite you to present whatever you find, right? If you find that we're all crazy and it's all wrong, if you find that, you know, the film is altered, whatever. He says, I'm going to send you a box full of books, And so I got these Amazon box or two of stuff. That's when Amazon, actually just sent books and things like that. He sent it to Australia, Robert Groden's book and a whole lot of other books, and things, and copies of Life magazine. He managed to get some of those from the, what was that bookstore in Waco, Texas, that had a lot of the hard to get, sort of conspiracy type books. Anyway, he sent all that. He said, whatever you find, I'm going to invite you over. I'll fly you over and we'll do it. I said, okay, well, okay. I'll see if I can get some time off work at school as a teacher and I'll do that. So anyway, I'm looking, and of course, having better source material and other materials and some background, even books from the 60s where they had like affidavits of the people, copies of, I mean, it's all on the internet now, but back then it was easy to get them out of these books. So as I went through, I was doing these things, and the one, I think I actually showed this, and it's on the introductory page. I actually added it in because I didn't have her in there. But the one thing that changed my mind after having read a lot of these books was Gene Hill. Now that this is getting a little bit obscure, but if you look at the Zapruder film at any time, and it's on, and I'll even look at now to make it less confusing, I'm actually going to click on which page it is on the on my little introduction. So I've now put it in on the, it's called the Fast Forward Mistakes. So johncostello.com/JFK/intro/fast. But you can get to it through the introduction, which is on the JFK page. And the second one actually shows Gene Hill. Well, the first two things I want to do is show things that don't move, people that seem frozen, one of whom is the president. He, apart from reacting, he just sort of is frozen for a number of seconds. But the other one is Gene Hill. And I actually, the original version of what I show there with Jean Hill, she's got a red, I don't even, Sally, my wife Sally is the fashion
It's like
person.
a overcoat. It's like
Yeah,
a
an
red
overcoat.
jacket. Yeah,
Yeah,
overcoat.
it's a, I don't know clothes. She knows clothes. She'll tell me off later and say, that's just an overcoat or a raincoat or something.
Yeah.
She, and it's bright red. And it's a Zapruder film, she's bright red. She's right, her and her friend Mary Moorman, who I actually got to speak to in, about 12 years ago, 11 years ago. Gene Hill has passed away since, but Gene Hill was there, and they describe, and other people describe, that when the president was coming, that she was sort of yelling out, "Hey, Mr. President, look over here," and all that sort of thing. Well, you look at her in the Zapruder film, and her body, she's holding her hands clasped as if she's, I don't know, praying, not with her fingers up, but maybe just clasped in front of her. Her body does not move at all, and all that you see is her head sort of flips back and forth. And when I stabilized that clip for myself, and I'd actually deblurred some of those frames, which is why I was playing with it to see what she looked like. It doesn't matter whether you deblur the frames or not, because as a if you play it at full speed, you look at that and you say, "That's weird. Like that's not what she just, that's not what
Well,
anyone described."
don't even get me started on how many things are weird in that whole movie. I mean, we could start at the corner when the police are coming around. I mean, it gets, as you know
Well,
that that's just one of the many crazinesses of the film. But go ahead, I'm listening. This is fascinating.
that you got to. I'm rolling all the way back to when I didn't know anything about the film. I mean, I'd watched it a few times, on those video clips even back then, and I could put it together, but I didn't know. I just assumed it was legitimate, and as I said, all the properties meant that I could not see how anybody could alter it to the extent that people were saying, taking out a limo stop and cutting this out and moving that around. I thought that was impossible. I was just sort of looking what was happening. And this was the first one, to me at least, where I really looked at that. And that was the moment that I thought, there's something wrong with this film. See, now you don't normally notice it because, of course, one, the Zapruder film is jerky, which it could be because it's quite zoomed in and there's a guy apparently standing on the top of a pedestal, which is a whole other story. Like, he didn't have to stand up there. He said he had vertigo and he got his secretary to stabilize him. There's no reason to be up on the pedestal. He could have stood next to the pedestal because there's no one in front of him. So even
What
that whole story is
exactly?
crazy.
And guess what? I gotta say this right now. I have tried to get up on that damn pedestal. Now, I'm a fat old lady, and yes, it's hard for me to do anything, but even if I had been in shape and whatever, it would have been very difficult to get up on that thing. You kind of have to go over to the side of the pergola, and you have to kind of go up on the side by the bushes and get on it there because that's its lowest point, and it's not easy. And I'm just wondering why. I always wondered, why did he even bother? You know? But go ahead. Well, I can, you know what? I actually know the answer to that. Because if the guys were in the pergola right behind him with the rifles, and they had to know they were there, as you and I both know, he had to get up high enough to be out of the way of the shots.
Well, that's possible, but the other thing is that they needed. Anyway, the film appears to come from that location, and they probably had someone standing on there. So I have to say, back in 2003, the first time I visited Dealey Plaza, it was the only time I'd visited a place in my life where I knew my way around and I knew exactly what it looked like before I'd ever visited, because I'd done so much work on the Zapruder film. However, I realized I turned a couple of corners and then I looked out and I thought, I've never seen this view before. And that's when I realized that all of the photographic evidence of the JFK assassination comes from just a few locations. In a couple of cases, they didn't have any choice about things got out, but they basically rounded up all the evidence. There's a whole chunk of space in Dealey Plaza where you would have expected, even in 1963, for there to be more photographs, if not a couple of films. But for example, if you come out of what was the sixth floor, the Texas School Book Depository, and cross that little Elm Street extension, that view is not basically anywhere. So when I did that back in 2003, I thought, that's weird. And then I go, 100 feet down the road, and suddenly everything's familiar again. So that in itself is weird, that there's only so many locations. But I was, I've lost where I was going with that diversion, but that's good. I've got Gene Hill in front of
Well,
me, and he's like a
let me
stunned
ask you
mullet.
something. The reason I think we don't have many locations of the film and the footage and the pictures is because they confiscated all of it, right? I mean,
Yes,
they
so
tried.
that's right. They got almost all of it. And and it was funny, when I was doing this stuff, okay, obviously I just described 2002, I suddenly realized there's something wrong with the film. It developed from there. And so by the time May 2003 that I went to Duluth, I gave a presentation on why the whole thing is a fabrication. Not just altered, the whole thing is a fabrication, from the first frame to the last, out of real footage and other photographs, but it's not even slightly altered. You can't even have something slightly altered. It's like being pregnant, the old joke. You can't be half pregnant. This thing, I already knew it either had to be completely fabricated or completely genuine because of all these physical properties. And once I convinced myself and then proved physically, with physics properties, that it was not genuine, then you're left with the only option that the whole thing is fabricated frame by frame. That's difficult work, but not impossible, particularly not if you're talking about after the assassination, where, say, the National Photographic Interpretation Center, which used to be down here in DC, Navy Yards, if people were told this is highly classified, it could be World War III, Oswald, Cuba, Russia, whatever, you could people of that caliber could fabricate this film from real footage and photographs and so on, in some reasonable amount of time. Now, not days. I don't believe it could be done in days, no matter how many people you got. But within weeks, probably, and definitely
I
within months, you
agree.
could.
I
So
agree.
that's where I was with Gene Hill.
Okay, now we're going to have to take our break here in less than a minute. So what I wanted to ask you is let's hit this when we get back from the, to the next area. And then after we kind of get through the film today, which may take a while longer, and I hope it does, we've got to talk about the tapes that just came out from, on Alex Jones's show, which I'm sure you're very much aware of. And we also need to talk about the dump. The report dump that's supposed to happen. And so I'm not going to let you forget about those two things, okay?
No, I've got those written down.
Yeah, good. Good, good. 'Cause they're written down. They're like big swatches of lines underneath each one of them for me today.
You
So
can see
yeah,
it,
we'll
can you?
get
That's
there.
good. Okay.
Yeah. So you did hear the Alex Jones tapes, right?
I don't think I have. I've been very busy recently, so.
Oh my God, you didn't hear the confession from Billy Celestes?
I'd heard of that some time ago. I don't know if I've heard the tapes, but I don't actually
Okay,
get too
well, we'll
much
talk
chance to
about
listen to it.
it.
We'll talk about
Yeah,
it.
we'll talk about it after the show. I mean, not after the show. Well, yeah, I guess you and I are going to talk about it after the show. But I'll explain it a bit during the show so people understand what I'm talking about and tell you all where to go to listen to it because it's very intriguing. Now, I think the music's going to start any second now. Let's see. Yes, there it comes. Okay, so John and I are going to take a quick break, you guys, and we'll be back, and then I got to tell you all about Revolution Radio.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message. Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law. Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's iPhone, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Mountain High Time, 2 hours of an organization to the madness, discussing the ever-changing dynamics of being both physically and mentally prepared for a plethora of possible outcomes to our future and present. A look into the latest technologies, new scientific discoveries, and how they might be used in connection to the human domain and controlling it, ancient cultures and places. Be warned. This is an opinionated look through headlines. Guests that are not afraid to question the narrative. A little bit of crazy ramblings of a stoner conspiracy factist that pushes constitutional concepts. The place and the time are the same, another dimension we call Mountain High Time. Saturdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Mountain High Time. Right here on Revolution.Radio, where information never sleeps and truth breaks the spell.
Welcome to Coffee Rants with Dan. I am the spiritual anarchist, Dan Arnold, your host. Tune in for what's really happening every Thursday. That's Thursday at 9 a.m. in Studio A on Revolution Radio. They keep us in fear to manipulate us. They want us ignorant so we're easier to enslave. They make us murder one another so they don't have to do it themselves. Only you can break their mind control by healing the contradictions within your belief systems that allow you to accept their lies in the first place. The time has come for us to remember our divinity, who we really are, to return to what we are meant to be, a service to others, to return to nature, and to reclaim our birthright, that which is freedom. The truth? The truth will sound belligerent because it is in direct opposition to lies, so get angry, because anger is sacred, and together we can unite and rise. Rise from this darkness. Humanity, assemble.
If you're sick of the lies and ready to know thyself, to love thyself, well then tune in to the Lovolution with your hosts, Amy and John Paul, where we speak all about truth, love, and freedom every Tuesday night, 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A, right here on Revolution Radio. And remember, only you can free your mind control. Be a Lovolutionary.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Fenton Perspective here on Revolution.radio. And you guys know what time it is. It's time where I tell you we're a listener-supported network, and we really do appreciate your help whenever you can and as much as you can. And you know, my favorite way to support us is to go to the website, revolution.radio, and when you get there, go to the very top of the page, and it says Patreon right there at the very top, and I'd love for you guys to become a Patreon member. And the reason why, and I harp on this every week that I'm here, it's really important to know when the money's coming in. It's nice to know you got a budget in front of you instead of scraping for dollars behind you. Okay, so we love it when you guys donate $5 a month. That's all we ask, $5 a month. That's $60 a year. If you can afford $10 a month, wonderful. If you can afford $20, great. But five. I mean, if I could get 1,000 people at $5 a month that would donate to the network, we would not have to worry about our servers and problems with, you know, the computers breaking, you know, all the problems that you have running a network. It's a never-ending battle, you guys. It's not like we can wake up tomorrow and say, oh, yeah, everything's running fine and it's fixed. You've got to put money aside and get ready for the next disaster. That's just part of the gig, you know. So if we could know that we're getting money coming in every month from Patreon, we can plan for the things we have to buy. So that's why I always ask you guys, please, please, please become a Patreon member, $5 a month. That's it. Keeps all of us here on air, including Jim Fetzer. And, you know, we used to have Scott Bennett here, but he left us, and I miss him so much. But, yeah, I mean, so many, many great hosts, and I hope you guys really want to support us and help us out. So please do if you can. $5 a month, that's all we ask. And everything's free. You know, this whole network, it's totally free. You can go into the archives and go back 2 years of shows. You can download it, take it with you, do whatever you want. We're totally free. And so we rely on the kindness of strangers to help us out. So please do that, and we'd appreciate it. Thank you so much. Now, let's talk about my sponsors. Okay, I have C60 products from Bob Greska. Oh my God. I've told you guys about my face serum stuff, right? Oh my God. I haven't got a wrinkle on my face anymore. I mean, I do when I smile, but I'm 67 years old. I'll be 68 this summer. And people look at me and they go, you're lying. Now, when they look at my hands and my arms and my all the wrinkles all over my body, yeah, then I'm 67 years old, you know, going on 70, as they say. But they look at my face and they go, nah, there's no way you're 55. So if I cover the rest of my body up in a burqa and just have my face showing, they would never be able to guess my age. See, there you go. Now, I've got to figure out something to do about your hands, you know, because your hands get old and they get kind of crepey looking. But anyhow, so I'm telling you, my face, this face serum from C60, oh my God. And I've been using the roll-on on my psoriatic arthritis on my left knee. Oh my God, you guys, if it wasn't for that, I don't know what I'd do. I swear, it makes it so I can walk, and, you know, when it's cold out, it hurts really bad, and I put it on, it just goes away like in 5 minutes. It's amazing stuff. And I can't say it's going to work for you, but I can say this. Give it a try. Call Bob. If you go to C60.com or C-60.com, it gives you Bob's phone number. Call Bob. Say, I listened to Lorian's show and she swears by your stuff. What can it do for me? And tell him your problems and he'll help you out. He'll help you guide you to what you need. They've got a spray on. They've got the roll on. They've got stuff for your face. They've got stuff for your skin, for certain ailments. I mean, they've got all kinds of formulas. So I think it's four or five. So the question is, what do you need for your particular problem? So that's why you call Bob. Bob helps you out and he'll take care of you. Now, that's C60.com or C-60.com. Now, my next sponsor is Doc Wallach, and you want to go find his products at dailywithdoc.com. Dailywithdoc.com, not D-O-C-K, D-O-C. And the reason you go there is because Doc Wallach is the original creator of the Longevity products. And the reason I like his products so much is because they've been formulated since the 80s, and he uses all natural ingredients. I think most of them are organic. There's no glyphosate, GMO, you know, metal. They're totally pure and clean, and they've been around forever. It's kind of like the old Shaklee products, you know. They were really pure at the time and still are, and I'm sure if they were around, I don't think they're around anymore. But you get the point. This is Longevity products, and they've been reformulated, and you can go listen to, if you go to dailywithdoc.com, Rebecca, or is it Rachel? I can't remember. Rebecca or Rachel, his assistant, they do a show every day where they answer people's questions online, live, about health issues. And then they guide you to what products they have that could support your issue or your problem. They can't guarantee anything. You know, they can't give health advice, whatever. He is a doctor, so he can get away with a little more than most people. But bottom line is, you want to go to dailywithdoc.com, listen to what he has to say. Text them during their live show or call in to their live show and ask them questions about what's going on with you, and they will guide you to the right products. Their products are amazing. They've reformulated everything, and I take the whole body toddy, and their nascent iodine spray under your tongue is remarkable. So it's very good. So I hope you guys go to both of my sponsors. That's dailywithdoc.com to hook up with Doc Wallach, the originator of Longevity products, and also Bob Greska over at C60.com. Okay, back to John. John, are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. Okay, so we were just talking about the problem with Jean Hill, but we never really kind of clarified what was going on with her coat.
Oh, that was just so people, when they look at the Zapruder film, can see what I'm talking about. It's just before or at the time that the headshot of JFK, that you see the lady in the red overcoat behind.
Oh, I see. Yes. Okay.
So, but she's absolutely frozen in, and that was the thing that did not make any sense, because by that point in time, I had read enough books. Nobody disputed that she was doing silly things. There's all stories that she had a boyfriend that was in one of the motorcycle cops, or Mary did. I can't remember what it was, but nobody disputed the fact that she was, you know, yelling around and running around, waving her arms, saying, look over here, Mr. President. She got criticized because I think she said afterwards that there was a dog in the street, which there was no dog in the street. I think she actually said there was a dog in the seat. Jackie had some little puppety thing that might have looked like a dog sitting there in the car, because, you know, you're not going to notice what goes past. But whatever she said, nobody disputed the fact that she was sort of, you know, animated. In a Zapruder film, she's not animated at all. And of course, the other films are all consistent with the Zapruder film. That's one thing people ask me, like, if they changed the Zapruder film, surely they'd have to change the Nix film and the Muchmore film. They're much blurrier, shorter films taken from further away. And the answer is yes, they all would have to be consistent. But the Zapruder film is the one that shows you far and away the most detail, just from the sort of camera that it was supposed to have been taken from and where he was, and the fact that he got the whole sequence, including turning the corner, which is not the case with the actual film. We were talking about being up on that pedestal in Dealey Plaza. I also stood up there in 2003. I was actually a little bit heavier than I am now, I think. And then when we were in Dallas again last year for the MUFON Symposium DFW, we went down to Dallas again. We've been there a few times and stood up on the pedestal again on, I think it was July the 12th, of course, because we were sitting at the symposium when that morning we learned that Jones Harris, a long-time friend and JFK researcher, died that morning. And we suspect when the news started coming through later that afternoon about the assassination attempt that he might have had a hand in nudging Trump to save his life. That was our own little sort of spiritual guess, because we were pretty devastated that Jones had passed away that morning. So Jean Hill, yes, she did not look right, but that, of course, that doesn't mean anything. Like, she could say she was doing some stuff, maybe she was frozen for those couple of seconds when he went past, but that got me, that changed my mindset, where I was looking at the film saying, I wonder if something could be wrong with it. And then, so it's easy now looking back, because the last few years I've done forensic type investigations at work. Back then I was just, you know, doing image processing and programming and things like that as a hobby. But I still probably had the same mindset. I thought, okay, if you did make a mistake, where would you most likely make a mistake? And Jim Fetzer had sent me the copies of Life magazine that had been mailed out to millions of people. Well, one of them was mailed out just days after the assassination. And that's actually the tightest constraint on anything that happened afterwards, because once you print things in Life magazine and mail copies out to millions of Americans, you're never going to get that toothpaste back in the tube. You can't. It's right. Not China, not communist China, where you could somehow round everybody up and get their copies back. It's gone. It's there. It's in attics. It's everywhere. And that's actually what happened. So in those, there were mistakes made in the frames, very bad quality frames in the first issue. Those couple of issues where they showed frames from the 8mm film, they never called it the Zapruder film ever, even though they owned the thing, they paid for it. They just called it the 8mm film of the assassination. They made mistakes there. And from that, looking at what was in there and then looking back at the film, led me to figure out some of the more subtle physics aspects. And again, there's a couple of pages on my introduction where I go through that in enough detail that you don't fall asleep thinking it's a high school physics class again, but with enough detail so you can see what's going on. Like, you can see that the sign was pasted into the film for what you see in Life magazine that first few days. But when you take into account all the optics, it seems like the sign moves around depending on how Zapruder points his camera, which makes no sense, of course. You can't – the sign is not connected to Zapruder's camera. But that was a physics mistake. And the nice thing, as Jim said at the end of my session 5 or 6 weeks ago, the nice thing about that proof is it's completely internal to the film. It doesn't matter where the sign was in a photograph the day before, the day after, you know, the same time or anything. It's actually inconsistent within the film itself. You go from one frame to another frame that's like half a second or a second later, and you can prove that the film is altered just from the internal properties. Now, subtle, it's physics. There's a lot of things that are easier to explain. Like, there's a whole motorcycle cop that when the shots rang out and the limo stopped, he went driving up forward to the lead car where there was like the local head of the Secret Service and the chief of police, and basically said, he's been hit, let's go to the hospital. Those people in the lead car testified to the Warren Commission and interviews and affidavits that this happened. This motorcycle cop drove forward to them. The problem is, it's not in any of the films, and it can't be in any of the films. You can prove that he did not, the films don't show him going there, but all these people just mentioned casually almost that he came forward and said, he's been hit, you know, to the hospital. And that's a much easier one to understand without having to delve into all this physics stuff where you might say, okay, I don't know. Is he doing the physics correctly? Is he lying? Is it, I can't tell, but you can definitely tell when there's a missing motorcycle that should be there, according to witnesses that would be on the government side of this whole case. That nobody even, I mean, somebody did notice this decades ago, but it didn't really get much attention, you know, until the last 20 years, and only a few times where it's like, hang on, there's a whole episode that's missing from this film. There's so much been cut out. And there's lots of things like that, and I explain that on a website as well. But, and I know I interrupted you, and we've got to get back to the document dump that's coming up.
Well, no, because I want to dig deeper into the film itself, if you don't mind, at least for the next, 15 minutes or so, because I still, to this day, I know the sign was moving around. I knew that the first time I saw it. I was like, what the heck's going on here? And then the other part that really struck me the very first time I saw it was the fact that all the people waiting for that limo to go around the corner that are standing in front of the school book depository, their heads don't move. It's so weird. It's like they're standing there and then the car goes by, but they don't go with the car.
Yeah. It
really bothered me. I thought, that is so weird. Why aren't they all moving and they're all frozen like?
There's a lot of and this is the thing. Once you get past that, once you go through the looking glass and you realize that the film has been fabricated from scratch and using 1963 technology. Now you have the full might of the CIA and their secret lab and everything to do it, but it's still 1963 technology. We're talking about no computers that are worth anything in this context. We're talking completely done by hand with rulers and pencils and photographic equipment and all that sort of thing. But the best in the world, classified stuff that we probably wouldn't know about for another 20 or 30 years afterwards, but still manually done. You look at this film as a fabrication, and I mean, apart from the fact that they could use real footage, like they had real films of the assassination, they had real photographs, and they took extra photographs after the assassination because that's the investigation. They're up on the pedestal, they're taking photographs to get reference photographs. But of course, you can then use that reference material to actually create a new film with. It's very complicated. It's worse than a Hollywood production. Like it's a classified, very deep, deeply sophisticated production. But you can create this film, even though it's only 26 seconds long, 486 frames, very sophisticated. But the point about those bystanders, like you look at them at first, and one of the things I did back in 2007, I think it was, and this is on my website as well. In fact, if I read my own website, it'll tell me exactly what year I did it. I created stabilized versions. I call them HD versions. Like high definition was a big thing back in 2006, it turns out to be. Now, they're like HD is terrible quality, 4K and 8K and 6K. But back then, HD was better than DVD and all that sort of thing. So I created these HD versions of stabilized. One of them follows the limo down the street. So it's similar to what you've seen with as far back as Grodin's showing of the film on Geraldo's Good Night America back in 1975.
Yes.
All the way through, except that Grodin, everybody always showed the film slowed down. So whenever they stabilized it, they slowed it down, which is an interesting observation in itself, because when you speed it back up to full speed and stabilize it, as I did back in 2006 and put it on the internet, you start to realize how ridiculous some parts of it are, because the problem with all the jerking and the moving and all that sort of thing is you don't notice some things that if you stabilize it and then play it at full speed, they look ridiculous. So some of my tutorial pages, introduction pages, go on with that. But one of the things I did, if you look at the stabilized versions on my website, after the one that follows the limo for the frames that the limo's actually on the film, the next one is the first of how many did I do? Five or six ones that actually keep the camera pointing in the one direction. Virtually, of course. This is all done with computers and algorithms and computer code, because that was, my hobby to do image processing and computer programming back then, until it turned into my job. So the first one actually shows you the first 257 frames of the film, pretending that the camera was just fixed, like on a tripod, looking at the top of Elm Street. So that gives you a much better view of all of those bystanders. Now, what happens is you actually get a number of seconds that happened sometime before the presidential limousine even got to the corner. So you see the lead motorcycles, which were some number of, I don't know how many feet they were ahead, but some number of seconds ahead of the limousine. You see them sort of come around, and one almost disappears off into the Elm Street extension, but then it sort of sneaks back in the sprocket hole area. And then there's a splice in the film, or not a splice, a camera stop. So it looks like he stopped filming, and then some number of seconds later, he started filming again. Now, forget about the problem that when he testified in the Clay Shaw trial, the Jim Garrison trial in the late 60s, which is the subject of Oliver Stone's movie. Zapruder actually almost couldn't recognize his own film. And also in the Warren Commission testimony, he seemed sure that he got the whole thing, like coming around the corner and everything. It's a little bit ambiguous, and it wouldn't be legal proof that he couldn't authenticate his own film, because, of course, film evidence is only admissible if somebody testifies that it's the exact film that they took.
Right.
Forget about the fact that there's no chain of custody for any of this evidence either, which is something that somebody noted to me 20-something years ago that was an expert in actual forensic investigations. He said, there's no evidence in that case.
What?
There's no evidence in that case. No. So when I started working on this stuff as a hobby 20-something years ago, I was at a party with some family friends at the time, and one of them was actually a forensic, criminal forensic investigator that did terrorist-type things like the Bali bombings, which were quite big in Australia because there were a lot of Australians there in Bali when there was a terrorist attack. He was one of the forensic investigators that went out to there. So he knew this stuff. I was just doing this, photo image processing. So I was talking a little bit about it. He says, there's no evidence in that case, the JFK assassination. I said, what do you mean there's no evidence? There's no chain of custody for anything, he said. And I wasn't really used to thinking in terms of evidence and forensic investigations back. I mean, these days I do, but back then I didn't really think that way. No matter how many TV shows you watch, you don't really understand how tough it is, how detailed it is to do a real forensic investigation. I mean, it's not like Law and Order or FBI Most Wanted on TV.
Right.
They just, they push a button and the face recognition, they found them, or they've zoomed in on a photo that's blurry. Like that stuff doesn't happen. That's just for TV. The point is, there's no evidence. In a sense, he was saying there's no real evidence. There's no admissible evidence because almost nothing really has a verifiable chain of custody. I guess it would still be admissible. If Oswald had lived, I guess there might still be admissible evidence with the Zapruder film. If Zapruder would have testified, absolutely, this is the film that I took and it looks exactly the same. I think under cross-examination, he probably would have been in trouble because he was confused enough under direct examination that he didn't recognize his own film. But anyway, so if you look at these, back to the people that were standing at the top, if you look at the second one that has frames 1 through 257 stabilized, so the camera, it looks like the camera's pointing in the one direction and the film sort of wobbles back and forth across the screen. After the camera stop, the stuff before the camera stop is fair enough. Like, there's a whole lot of people just lining up waiting, when's the president going to come? It reminds me of like a week ago, we were lined up to see if we can get into one of these events for 7.5 hours, and we went like three blocks and then gave up and came home. Luckily, we're right next door to where it was all happening. But they're sort of all waiting there, which is fine. But then it flicks to where the president's coming down the street, Jackie and the president. I mean, he joked about her being more famous than him. And the people are still not animated, which is actually weird because there's like one or two photos showing the crowd kind of leaning out and excited, as you would be.
Right.
But this crowd, now, it is not true that they are completely frozen. So if you look at that stabilized clip, you can see that they, I'm sitting here with them all frozen so they don't distract me. But if you look at one of them, and you can full screen it as well,
right,
you can see that their hands are clapping. But their heads don't turn, don't move. Actually, the guys right at the end of that clip, so up around frame 240, the two guys that are near the tree on the other side of the road on the grass, they're the funniest ones because they're like looking up the street at the corner and they never follow the limo. And then one guy's hands just fall down. And I always used to joke, I think I did in 2003 as well, that he sort of says, oh, well, we've missed the president because the car's just driven past and I didn't even watch it. It's possible to miss the whole thing, but look at all those people, and they're just clapping as he comes past. They're the most. I mean, for having stood out there in that Dallas heat that day, even though it was November, it was quite warm, and then just to stand there clapping their hands politely, you'd think at least some of them that got so far down that they're in this sort of isolated part. This is after it's gone right through the city. This is the last little bit before he zooms off up the Stemmons Freeway. They're just not moving at all. So when you look at that, you say, one, that looks suspicious, but then you've got to realize if this is actually a fake film, that's a pretty good effort. They've probably taken footage from before the car came past, but then they've put people clapping, they've put hands clapping on all these people. That's still a lot of work to put clapping hands on a whole lot of people when you've got to do it manually. But what you want to avoid if you're creating this film from scratch in the days, weeks, months after the assassination. And the exact time frame is difficult to pin down because we've got very loose constraints about when the whole film was finished. It's definitely within a year.
Which we'll talk about in a few minutes about the whole Doug Horn thing. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. He criticized that, but that's fine. But anyway, you've got at least weeks, if not months, to do this thing. What you don't want, the first thing you do is set up a basic storyboard, a sort of timeline of where things are going to be at what time, and then you start filling in. The other thing you've got to put in is all the photos that did get out. There's not many, but there's a few photos that got out, Associated Press and a few others. You have to make sure that whatever you do put out, and also what you publish in Life in the first few days, everything you then create after that has to fit in with those keyframes. Okay, that's quite a tricky thing, but you can still do it. It was a difficult constraint, but it leads to certain problems like the whole back into the left, which I strongly believe, and other people do as well, that the whole back into the left after the headshot, with that little forward movement in the first frame to make it confusing.
Yes.
The whole back into the left wasn't really showing that the shot came from the front because the physics, I haven't really watched too many films of people actually getting shot in the head, but the way it works is that, you know, the bullet will blow things out the back, but your head doesn't necessarily move backwards because everything that's being blown out the back of your head is moving backwards. The physics doesn't say that it'll necessarily move backwards.
That's true.
The back into the left, the problem is if you look at that first issue of Life magazine, they show one frame, they show one photograph that today we take to be just before he gets hit in the head, and another frame showing what we now believe to be is like half a second later. And the problem is between those two frames, he's moved from being leaning forward to being back on the back of the seat. And what you have to do is if you're trying to get rid of a whole lot of action, like we know that the limo stopped in between and all sorts of things happened and Secret Service agents jumped out and the motorcycles went, you know, around the limo. And there's at least a couple of seconds, if not multiple seconds of action that were taken out. But the problem is if you take out all that action, take out all that time, but you've published photos of JFK suddenly going from the front to the back, you have no choice but to have him sort of slammed back, at least after that first frame that they had him going slightly forwards just to make everything totally confusing. Of course, you know, it you can do what you want if you're creating a film. You don't have to make the physics make sense. In fact, the more confusing it is, the better, because then, you know, we're still sitting here 61 years later, not exactly knowing what happened, and we don't have a real film, but the one that they created is so realistic looking and so well done in so many respects that it's actually hard, even for people that completely believe this film to be a fake, it's hard for them to discount that in what they think, even when they know the things are fake. So people will make arguments and say, oh, yes, but we know that this happened. And I have to say to them, look, we don't know that happened because you're basing that on what you've seen in the film. So it's actually quite difficult. It's very difficult to scrub your brain. The one advantage I had, and this I'm not plugging anything. Well, I don't plug anything because there's no ads on my page or anything like that. Although the products that you said, I haven't tried those products myself. But one thing I will say, you do have to try every product for yourself and look after yourself and find out which works for you. So I completely support that. That's just going back to your ads before. But the thing I'll say about the on my website, which I said, I've never made anything out of the assassination, and I don't have any real cost to cover either. I did put this is what I did do in 2007. I did an eyewitness compilation. It's like 100 pages of text of, apart from which direction the shots came from and how many shots, because that was already done. That's why it was done by Stuart Gallinor 20-something years ago.
Right.
I looked at everything else that the eyewitnesses said in the Warren Commission volumes themselves or FBI affidavits and so on, and sort of compiled that together, like 100-plus pages. The reason being is that I had to try – once. This was 5 years after I proved to myself that the film was a fake. If the film was a fake, how do I get a good picture of what actually happened? So I went through and read and compiled and compiled and put it all together, and it's out there. You can read it now. Basically, with a bit of a timeline, with the number of witnesses. Sometimes it's a small number. But for the limo stop, everyone, you know, this has been published many times. We're talking about, you know, 70, 80, 60, however many witnesses said the limo stopped, or maybe almost stopped, because people have different perspectives of and where they were looking at things from. But anybody that looks at the Zapruder film or the Nixon film would never say that the limo stopped in the film. Like, you can't even tell that it slows down. I had to do calculations you know, all these complicated geometrical calculations 20 years ago to even prove that it slows down a bit. And of course, the Warren Commission, you know, eventually got those same calculations from people, but the limo doesn't stop. So anyway, if you read the eyewitness compilation, you get a completely different picture. It's like, you know, if you were blind and you were just listening to all the witnesses, but you could still picture Dealey Plaza, you get a totally different picture of what happened. So whenever I go back to Dealey Plaza, like when we were there on July the 12th, I can stand there and actually imagine what the whole assassination looked like, not from the Zapruder film, but from the film in my own head of what I think happened, which, you know, not ironically, it actually agrees with what other people that say they've seen another film of the assassination say they saw, which is different from the Zapruder film. They explain exactly the same things of, you know, the limo stopping and motorcycles going around, and Clint Hill actually gets to Jackie Kennedy and pushes her back in the seat and covers her and the president. That's not in the Zapruder film.
Right.
So either he's been lying from the day of the assassination to today. I mean, people can have their opinions about the Secret Service, and particularly about the driver and whatever. And you know, Jim's got certain theories and whatever. But he has said the same story for no good reason. I mean, it disagrees with the film. I even sent him a letter when I was in Australia, you know, 20 years ago, saying, you know, you must know that the Zapruder film does not show the truth. I said, I understand the situation you're in, but please, for posterity, record somewhere what actually happened so that 10, 20, 30 years from now, we'll actually find out what you actually – but he's gone around on book tours and said that he did these things. He pushed her down and covered her.
Oh, I know. Don't, yeah.
Which is weird, because no one trusts necessarily the Secret Service that was there that day. I mean, you're going to have different opinions about whether they're complicit or covered it up or whatever, but he has said that from the start. So anyway, the eyewitness compilation is a very interesting one. It's hard to do, particularly if you've looked into this. The more you've looked into the assassination, the harder it is to forget the film, because most of us are visual, well, many of us are visual people, and if we see something, seeing is believing. So once you've seen it, it's very hard to unsee something. But you have to try. Anyway, we're going to get back to this document dump, don't we? Because I can speak for hours on everything.
Well, let's kind of wrap up the whole conclusion that you've come to about the whole film itself, okay? I mean, in a big, you know, just kind of conclude for us what you came to, and we now know why you came to it, but give us a conclusion here.
Yeah, and again, with the website, hopefully it explains a little bit of that in more detail. So
exactly.
What I'm explaining here is just the short version, the summary version. But basically, whatever happened before the assassination, and people have theories about what was supposed to happen and so on. But when it did happen, they had these films, and I believe the theory that they planned to actually show a film of the assassination on the evening news almost, but it didn't really go down in a way that they could do that. So the films had to be edited. There were two paths to this. One is they published some frames of an 8mm film, that's all they called it, in Life magazine. Life apparently bought the whole film, right? So they could have had color, beautiful, and they did weeks later. They had some beautiful color photos, but they had these very muddy black and white ones, and they said this is from the 8mm film, The Assassination. And then basically not much else, apart from some color ones, not much else came out in Life for a whole year. Separate to that, on that same weekend, so JFK, it's Friday, November 22nd, 1963, 12:30 in Dallas, JFK is killed. So as you go through that weekend, the Saturday, the Sunday, and then Monday was the funeral of JFK, you have we know from other revelations from other document dumps, if you like, about the National Photographic Interpretation Center and the Sunday night briefing boards that they created from some version of some film.
Right.
And Doug Horn's work, and I think it was Peter Jenny around 2009 to 2011, found evidence of a separate event at the same facility the night before with a different cast of people and a different film and a different story of how it got there. And that's, you know, Doug Horn has a whole article in a number of places, you know, the two events at NPIC, I think, is the title.
Right.
And that's quite fascinating, because that I'd sort of speculated about that back in 2003, that as you went through that first weekend, versions of the film, we're talking about as a film, to be viewed as a film full time, you know, full speed or maybe slightly slowed down a few times or 10 times, 20 times, like you would watch a film at the, you know, Mary Poppins or whatever. Versions of the film were being quickly edited together that changed the story of what was happening. So it seems like people saw a version of the film on Saturday, the day after the assassination, when Oswald was still alive, that were pretty close to what probably actually happened in Dealey Plaza. By the time you get to Sunday, they're talking about a film that is not quite the same, but it's still closer to the truth than what we have today. Then you have – so if you're talking about a film that you're editing for showing people, it doesn't have to be – you've got no physicists sitting down there like I have with computers for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years later, 60 years later, analyzing this frame by frame. You just have people looking at things for the first time and being absolutely shocked at seeing their president, you know, shot. And you don't have to make it very sophisticated. You can just very quickly edit the motion, edit the film, and come up basically with a new edited version of what happened. As you get forward in time, now the surveyors that were actually creating a map of Dealey Plaza, because this is now a crime scene, and even if Oswald was assassinated on Sunday, they did, you know, they took photographs, they had surveyors that created basically a full survey of Dealey Plaza and Elm Street and all the measurements. The problem is two things with that. We know that the film still wasn't in its final form then, in the weeks after the assassination, because for one, their map, their survey maps, don't have the correct positions of things where shots apparently happen, not even of the headshot. But also the surveyors themselves described having multiple frames where you could see stuff being blown out the back of the president's head, which we don't have on the Zapruder film. So it seems like there was still editing going on. Now, does that extend to the end of 1963? Does it go through to February when the Warren Commission is starting up? Does it go all the way to November of 1964 when the actual frames of the Zapruder film, or at least the middle bit of it, were published in black and white in the Warren Commission volumes? It's difficult. And as I said, that's where Doug Horne criticized me all those years ago for saying that, you know, they took 12 months or 10 months or 8 months to create the film. They created something very quickly. They created other things at different time periods. And I honestly don't know what existed at what point in time other than what was published, which was very little. We have, you know, two issues of Life magazine in November, December 1963. Then we've got one in September 1964, actually October, start of October, when the Warren Report came out, which basically has the same stuff they showed in December the last previous year. And then we've got another issue in November. And then we have the Warren Commission volumes where you've got all, you know, you've got a few hundred frames in black and white. So you can't, you've definitely got things locked in, at least for that part of the film, by then. So that's, it sounds complicated, but basically the whole film, you know, there's two viewpoints you can have that are consistent with me in gross terms. One, you could have a viewpoint that the whole film is completely authentic. You would then have to prove my proofs of alteration of fabrication to be incorrect. And no one's done that yet, but someone could do that. And if they convinced me that I was completely wrong, then they basically would prove that the whole film, apart from, you know, adding some paint here and there, has to be authentic, because it's so, it fits together. Every frame is chained to the next one and the previous one. The other alternative, there's no half-pregnantness. The other alternative is the whole film has been fabricated from end to end. So the whole six-foot strip of celluloid up the road in the National Archives from here is an actual fabrication. It's supposed to be a camera original, but it's actually 486 – well, not some of them are missing, but basically 486 frames created one by one and then photographically reduced back down onto – exposed onto a genuine strip of film, correct Kodachrome II film from that era – and then processed as if it was the camera original film, and then eventually 30 years later ends up in the National Archives when the government took it and then paid the Zapruders $16 million for taking their film. So that's my basic opinion, and as I said, more details on the website, a little bit more graphics on the presentation I gave last month for you and Jim. And there's a book, The Great Zapruder Film Hoax. It's 21 years old now, but at least you can get it on Kindle, so it's not as rare as it used to be when it was only secondhand paperback versions going out. That's what I that's my basic take on the whole Zapruder film. And that's the only thing I'm an expert on in this whole case, not the rest of the assassination.
Wow. Well, I'm telling you, John, you just blow my mind, because you take it, what you're doing is you're taking the timeline approach, which is the way everybody should have done it in the first place. And I don't know why they argue to this day, because if you do take it as a timeline like you have done, everything changes as we go forward in time. So that's the problem. Yeah. If things start getting altered as time progresses, then you know you've got a hoax somewhere along the line, right? Period. It's that simple. I don't know why people make it complicated. And I don't know why everybody's fighting over it. I as far as I'm concerned, this whole, you know, Doug Horn stuff, I believe Doug Horn. I believe exactly what they said happened. But that doesn't mean there wasn't something else going on at the same time. It's somewhere else. You know, that's the problem. See, these guys, and I love Doug, don't get me wrong. I love Horn, I love Mantic, I love all these guys. But the problem is they get very caught up in the fact that they have the only truth. And that bothers me. I think every one of those JFK researchers with such big egos needs to sit down and take a closer look at themselves, because the reality is everything isn't as it seems. They've just got one little piece of the pie, you know? And if you close your mind to it, you'll never get to see the whole big picture. So there you go. That's my take.
Well, the one point I tried to make 5 or 6 weeks ago was that Doug Horn's scenario for the film being altered is completely consistent with what I have been saying happened over that first weekend. Like, as you said,
absolutely,
that happened for the film that was being shown to people, but separately, it cannot create a film that is the one that's in the National Archives today. You cannot use those film editing techniques of, you know, cutting out penguins sort of thing and sticking it in animated. You can't use those sort of optical or aerial printing techniques to create the film we have in the archives today. I mean, I could, if any physicist wants to debate that and sit down with me, I'll show it to them. And any physicist that's looked at this has basically said, yeah, okay, that makes sense. In fact, David Mantic, who is a physicist, he was overjoyed when I proved that some of his proofs from the book before the Great Zapruder film hoax were wrong, because he hadn't taken into account some physics principles. That's the way it works. So that's my overall take. And as I said, it's totally consistent. Doug Horn filled in the missing pieces about what was actually happening on that first weekend. I think
Absolutely. There's
a consistent story, and I'd like to take ego. I mean, I've got no horse in this game, dog in this fight. I'm just trying to get to the truth if we can, which gets us back to the document dump. But anyway.
Yeah. So, okay. So moving on to the document dump, what do you think we're going to hear see that's new or different than anything they've ever given us before? You got any ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably everybody on listening, you and I and everybody listening, anybody that's looking at this thing, it's like, and I've got to say with Trump, I mean, you know, a year ago we were back in Australia for the first time in 8 years, and on New Year's Eve our resolution or the next day was to not be quite so scared about who we believe in. And as you said about yourself, Australians are Australians are pretty down the middle of the road politically, and a lot would call themselves, they wouldn't call themselves libertarians because we don't quite use that term, but I think a lot of Australians are right down the middle. But we came out and said, okay, we're not going to be so, I've had to be cautious for some number of years. I nearly got sacked for even expressing an opinion. But a year ago, it's a matter of public record, a year ago, I'm actually, I think, the only employee of my company living in the District of Columbia who donated officially to Trump in 2024. So that shows that I'm declaring that I'm a Trump person. But you see, I sort of understand him because his way of saying things makes sense to an Australian. People take it too seriously and too literally.
Exactly. It makes sense to me too, because I've been around Asperger people my entire life and they all talk backwards. And that's exactly what he's kind of halfway there, you know what I mean? And
well, there's quite a number of people that are. So, but anyway, the point of Trump, so, and I understand some people, the one thing that everybody, I think, in this country would agree, that over the last week, Trump's executive orders have had a huge impact. Now, a little more than half the country would say that they've had a good impact. A little less than half the country would say that they're having a terrible impact. But no one would deny that the executive orders that he's issued already in the first week are already and will have a huge impact. However, the one on the JFK and related records is strange to me, and he has to go on what he's advised to do. Because like I think as you were implying, we've been here before. The JFK Records Act in 1992 was supposed to, you know, after Oliver Stone's thing and Back into the Left and everything, everyone's outraged, and Congress passes a law that basically says you've got to don't wait 75 years. Although we're nearly there, it's 61 years already, but don't wait 75 years, let's release it. Now, there was, of course, a clause, the president could keep things if it's national security and so on, and Trump released some in, I think, 2017, and Biden might have released some more. But I think the other thing I think everybody that's looked at this case would agree is that apart from a few little tidbits, there's basically nothing much left to release. They're probably being protected because they do legitimately in some way or another, you know, jeopardize sources or methods or whatever of the intelligence community. I don't think there's any huge thing. Like, I don't think they're sitting – I don't think the CIA or anybody else is sitting on a genuine film of the assassination necessarily, not in the official records. I think everybody would believe that either – there was nothing – if you believe the Warren Commission version of things, nothing was there in the first place, like it's all legitimate. Or if you think there was a conspiracy and a cover-up and everything, the records aren't going to be there. Like, they're not – they're physically not going to be there. It's not that hard to do back in 1963 or any time in the 61 years since. So there will be some things I believe that come out. Obviously, Trump has seen the things that he didn't declassify, and he must think that some of the things that are left might be of importance. But I don't think it's going to be much. I think it's the lowest impact executive order out of however many he signed in the last week.
Right.
But the thing that gets me about it is I'm not sure if he fully understands. Like, we talk about the Warren Commission. Everyone talks about the Warren Commission, you know, Warren Commission apologists and so on. And you think of the Warren Commission, you say, okay, the Warren Commission was run by the Chief Justice of the United States, Earl Warren.
Yeah.
But actually, it was a Supreme Court thing, right? Well, it was nothing to do with the Supreme Court. The Warren Commission is just what we call it because Earl Warren was convinced to run it. The name of the thing is the President's Commission into the Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It was an executive order by the 36th President of the United States, 1 week after the assassination of the 35th president of the United States. It is an executive order. It is the president's commission into the assassination of his predecessor. Now, you can debate why he set it up and whether Johnson had anything to do with it. Forget about that. It was the president's commission. Trump could easily write an executive order, sign an executive order, basically telling whichever parts of the executive government to investigate some part of the JFK assassination again. I mean, the House Select Committee in the 70s, that was a House Select, it was a congressional thing. And the JFK Records Act was, again, passed by legislative branch of government. That was an act of Congress, signed by the president, but it was passed by Congress. The Supreme Court has had nothing to do with this. Earl Warren was just convinced. LBJ basically, whatever you believe, he was basically coerced into being the head of this commission. But it had nothing to do. In fact, there was a conflict of interest. Because if any case to do with this had ever come to the Supreme Court, he would be compromise. He'd be conflicted out because he was the head of the Warren Commission. I mean, there's no reason why he had to be there. You'd probably normally select a former Chief Justice if one existed, or a former Justice or some other really respected person. But LBJ convinced the sitting Chief Justice to run the President's Commission, which is an executive order of the executive. I mean, it's nobody really thought about it much at the time, I don't think. And I wasn't even alive at the time. But the weird thing about having the sitting Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States actually running something for the executive, for the chief executive of the United States, is a weird thing. So Trump, I mean, I don't know what Trump could do. But if I, you know, I mean, he's just less than a mile down the road here. And I wish I could go and speak to him. But if he's listening, or if somebody talks to him, if somebody knows somebody who knows him or knows somebody that advises him, he could say, look, sign an executive order to direct the agencies of the federal government to find a legitimate film, an authentic film of the assassination. Like, that's probably out there somewhere. I don't think they hold such a film. They might.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about also is, have you heard about Chana Willis? Do you know who Chana is?
I have just heard things. I've seen things coming through my email. I think David Mantic sent me something about that, but I've been very busy at work.
Yeah, Chana has – we don't – okay, I can't say a whole lot. All I can say is there is likely we have been okay. I'm going to take this back. Many years ago, when I was first involved with JFK, probably in the 90s, I heard that some agency, probably Naval Intelligence, was on the knoll that day and created a film. Now, I've looked over that whole film, all the Nick's films, every other film that's out there, looking for one person that's kind of hidden in the shadows, possibly taking a, you know, video of this, of the assassination for the government. Okay. So I've never been able to find one, but I haven't taken a magnifying glass and taken a loop and sat down there and gone over it that way. So long story short, I've been hearing this rumor for 25 years. And finally I talked to Jim Mars about it back in 2015. And before he died, and I said, Jim, do you think it exists? He goes, I know it exists. He goes, there's too much hoopla around it. It's got to be real. And I said, okay. And he goes, it's only the hoopla in the community and a leaker or two here or there every once in a while say, we know it exists. So we know it does. It's just whether we're ever going to get to see it, because it is, that angle. And supposedly it's down in the train yard area on a tripod, and it's got a telephoto type of lens while it's shooting it. This is what I've heard. So I don't know if it's real. I don't know if this is all a mirage or whatever, but Chana Willis may get us to the answer on that.
Well, I hope so. I've got to say, don't look too hard in the existing photographic evidence of the person shooting a legitimate film, an authentic right. film of the assassination, because nothing you're looking at is actually authentic. And if they were there, they wouldn't be there anymore. But I agree
with you on that.
Having, you have to judge people. There are a number of people who've said they've seen another film, and one I believe wholeheartedly, having been a friend of his for some time now. He originally thought that I was totally an agent doing, playing funny buggers. No. There's a long story there, and I'll get into that some other day. Anyway, but the other thing that I'll say, and I've said this before, and people know this, and they get
upset. 2 minutes left in the show, so go ahead.
Well, Rich De La Rosa, who ran this forum of crazy people, 20-something years ago, before right. he died, he sent me some control information, because he'd come public about the other film that he'd seen. He sent me extra information not long before he died, basically, I think, so that if I ever saw something, an authentic film or something purporting to be authentic, if it matched this extra control information, I would at least know that it's consistent with something that has never been said publicly by him or by me. So people get upset at me. It's like, why are you holding on to that? Why don't you tell us? Well, it's not control information if I tell you.
That's right.
So if I see a film now, and I won't, you're not going to play 20 questions. No one will do that with me. But if there is some film that purports to be an authentic film, apart from my picture of what everything I think happened, I have this other control information, which is not my own. I'm sort of safe. I'm custodian of it for Rich, who passed away shortly afterwards. And it'll be interesting to see what comes out. But, I'm not holding my breath, but it seems like an interesting time. I'd love for us to finally see an authentic film of the assassination. And I think if we see it, we'll know it's authentic.
But oh, absolutely.
We can also test it. I mean, there's so much technology, you can't trust anything now, but I think the nature of it will be that it would be at least consistent with what actually really happened.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And I hope, before I die, we do get that real film. And I know they've got to have one. Now, just a quick thing for you to let you know where I stand with this. I'm friends with Beverly Oliver, and we got less than 30 seconds, so I'm going to make this quick. And I believe that she unwittingly was taken down to Dealey Plaza with a special camera and all that as insurance for Jack Ruby. Okay? I think she was put up to that, not knowingly probably, but anyhow, long story short, do you think I'm on to something?
It could be. We've met Beverly at some of these events. I think I'm friends with her on Facebook, but it's possible. I don't, I have to take everything at face value. There's
yeah
It's impossible to untangle everything. But
someday we'll have another discussion about all the people we know in the community and what they're all doing with it and what's happening. We'll do the gossip show or something. That'll be fun. Anyhow,
I don't know much about that part. You're the expert on that one. I only know.
I do. I know all the dirt. It's pretty funny that I do. Okay, sweetie. Well, thank you. This has been so fascinating. Now, everybody go to John Costella, that's CostellaLA.com, and check out his amazing work. And thank you, John, for being on. The music's playing. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Lauren.
Listening to Revolution.